So what I can't seem to understand is how we have about 400 to 500 listeners per episode, and yet we don't have that many reviews. How many times do I have to request it? I don't know, but I really would appreciate it if you do. Today we have Kyle, which is a presenter from Grit Life, the main guy you hear on the GOTC races and the live streams. And this episode is presented by Fuel Lab. And go to their website, check them out. Best fuel stuff. We use them all the time, been using them for years. And on to the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Professional Awesome Racing Hypercritical Radio. That's our whole title, yeah. And
close enough.
yeah, I'm like one of the hosts, I guess. And there are some people that do some things and say some things, and they are.
This is Mike Lewin.
Devin Giles.
And we happen to have a guest today. So please introduce yourself.
I'm Kyle Heyer, motorsports presenter at GridLife.
Motorsports presenter.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe announcer. I was thinking about like inside man who does a bunch of shit that he doesn't get credit for, but presenter. I like that. All right.
Yeah. Originally I was a motorsports technologist, and that didn't, that wasn't really applicable. So
that is a dangerous term around here.
Yes.
Technologist is a dangerous term. Dan likes to throw that back at us. Cause a lot of us have technology degrees, like for our engineering jobs. And he's like, you're not a real engineer. You can't do
it. It hurts the heart.
It hurts the heart. Yeah. As I do more engineering than almost every engineer that I've ever met in my life. Anyway. Hi.
Hi.
So how are you today?
I'm doing great. It's a Friday, which is awesome. You know, get some weekend on the racing. There's a lot of racing this weekend. Sorry if you hear there's a bell. That's my cat playing in the background. I will try to mute myself so I don't have the cat a ton, but it's a good time.
We'll get our mixer guy to make it louder. So
excellent.
So we'll add more bell noises just in case.
Are you currently sitting at your sim rig?
I am. This is kind of my everything rig. I broadcast esports out of here, and this is kind of where my computer is set up. So triple screens and a seat and wheel and everything.
That's sweet.
Fancy.
He's a pretty important guy. So
yeah. So we're not going to go too deep into Kyle's background today, but I would like a little bit of it, right? And so can you tell us, you know, not necessarily, where did your motorsport side of your passion and your career kind of start? Like, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, so it all really started when I was a kid. I had a friend down the street named Joel that took me to Watkins Glen on his family vacation. And that's kind of where I got exposed to NASCAR and racing in general. And for the next handful of years, I was just kind of a fan of motorsports, would watch NASCAR and IndyCar sometimes. And then I got iRacing when I got into college and met my roommate through iRacing, just kind of through mutual friends. We found out that we both did iRacing. And during our sophomore year, he suggested, after reading through some Reddit posts, that we should try out iRacing broadcasting, which I didn't know what that was or why we should do it. I had no announcing experience, and he finally convinced me that it was worth trying. So we tried it, and then a whole bunch of things happened. We met a lot of people. Got okay at it, and then we ended up meeting the GridLife community through iRacing. And then after that, the GridLife guys asked me to come out to GridLife Midwest back in 2019, and kind of the rest is history there.
Awesome. So does that mean you're from the East Coast?
Yeah, so I'm, well, sort of, if you consider New York the coast. I'm from Rochester, New York,
close enough.
And went to school in Binghamton.
All right. So obviously, at least in our world, you're known as the presenter. So you're kind of known for your announcing, and obviously you're on the mic, in front of a live stream, all that stuff. That's kind of what you're known for here. What other jobs do you do within the GridLife community?
Yeah, so they're inside and outside of GridLife, actually. So my main role, again, I'm a motorsports presenter, and they didn't lock me down with announcer. I do a lot of writing and things too at GridLife. A lot of the articles that you see come out that are news related or results related are typically my work.
Okay.
But anything that deals with kind of bringing news to people about GridLife competition and rules and that sort of thing has kind of been an increasing role. And I also still work part time at Fanatec GT World Challenge America as a public address announcer for them on the side.
Oh, that's awesome. So you got in with the GridLife people, you know, the GridLife community, when you started doing some announcing. You talked about how you did iRacing. You did a little bit of announcing for that. I remember back in the day, I remember your company when you first started that collaboration. I actually listened to a couple things you did there with the with iRacing and such. So that was interesting. And then it kind of grew from there. And I see your name like all over the place. Obviously, you're trying to, you know, and like everybody at GridLife, you're trying to herd cats.
Yes.
So you've got all the GLTC people here. You're talking about rules all the time and all that stuff. So you're pretty well integrated and pretty heavily integrated into that GridLife community at this point.
Yeah, the GridLife team is pretty small when it comes down to it. And I think a lot of times the events that we put on make it seem like GridLife is a lot bigger company than it actually is.
Sure,
but in the office, there's really only four or five people that are really there. And when I got hired, there wasn't really an intention of me having a high touch on rules or anything of the sort. But me taking that role and kind of acting as a little bit of a messenger between Adam and Chris and the community, it allowed them to kind of just do businessy things and focus on that. And I could just kind of relay information. So that's kind of where that came from.
That's awesome. And so I want to know a little bit more, like, I've always been curious. I've sung your praises quite a few times on the podcast or otherwise, between our friends, especially, that I think that you do a very good job, especially for someone who kind of came out of nowhere. Like, you know, you just picked it up. Do you have a background at all? Like, did you do like a broadcasting background? Do you know that you have a radio voice? How did that even work? Like, you just
definitely
said you started
not those.
It. Definitely yeah, exactly. Not those. So like, how did that happen?
It completely, I mean, if you had told me 10 years ago that this is what I'd be doing, I would have laughed at you because I didn't even know that this was a job you could do. I was in school for electrical and computer engineering.
Oh, okay.
And that was kind of my background. In school, I was always, you know, a kid that would go home and I would like do a little electronics projects and things, Arduino stuff, all the things that high school and middle school kids get into.
Sure.
And when I got into college, the iRacing thing on the side, it was just a hobby. But the broadcasting thing, you have to ask Finian DeCuna was my roommate in college, and he was the one that started SimTV with me. And it was his idea entirely to try broadcasting. I had never done it before, hadn't even really thought about it. I didn't even consider it. And I had always hated the sound of my voice, especially when I was younger. And I don't think I liked the sound of my voice until I was probably 2 or 3 years into doing the esports stuff. And then listening back and improving the way I was speaking, I got comfortable with it. Now I'm pretty happy with where I'm at.
I mean, I think everybody kind of hates their voice to start with, or at least
yeah.
Still cringes every once in a while, right? Like it's weird. It's a thing that, you know, you hear it in your head and then it's recorded and then it spits out and you're like,
it doesn't sound anything like you heard it in your head.
That's not me. Yeah. I think that's true of a lot of people. And I think from, you know, that perspective where you spend some time, I assume you spend some time with the way that you deliver your cadence. Obviously you're careful with your words, the way you say things. I think that's hard. Like it's a very much a skill, and it's a very difficult skill to master.
It's really hard. And I think what helped me a lot, and I'm still working on all of those things, right? I mean, my
Forever.
Career is,
I mean, everyone's
is very
working,
young,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think one of the things that helped was I had the esports stuff where we were in college. I was a senior right when the pandemic hit. So we just dove into that, into iRacing broadcasting full on. We produced GT World Challenges esports production. Like I controlled those broadcasts. Those were 50,000 person view broadcasts. So big deal stuff. And so you really had to get good because the comments would let you know that. So you really had to focus. And I got so many repetitions and so much feedback and criticism that it allowed you to kind of shape the way that you talk. And it was something that took a couple of years. But I think by the time I got into front of a real broadcast, I'd at least gotten the kinks worked out to where I could speak. The next year or two was really trying to get competent at the things I was saying, because talking well and talking about things well are two completely different skills.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And originally I struggled a lot with time attack in particular, which is something I think I've gotten better at. Because it wasn't a sport I knew very well.
Sure.
Most people don't know it very well. I mean, it's kind of boring to watch, you know, right? So it's kind of hard to talk about a lapping car.
We're fixing that.
But I will admit, like, when I first heard you talk, I was like, holy shit. You got a real NASCAR announcer to hear this.
Yeah, I think like I agree. Like in, you know, to the earlier point about how, you know, we've sung your praises before, is that, you know, I know you don't listen, right? We talked about that before we started. Yeah, so
you hate us. I get
okay,
it.
Okay, put me on the spot, guys. Great.
Wow. You know. Anyway, obviously we don't talk. I don't talk to you often. I don't know if any of the other guys do. obviously we know each other from just community, right?
You know, cute little each highs names at a lot. Events and such.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously seeing you, you know, seeing you on the live stream, but we haven't had a lot of conversations, right? That's fair. But we've sung your praises before. We talked about it on the podcast, and I've talked about it before, that I think one of the criticalities, even World Time Attack, even all this stuff that really sets apart, I've talked about it too with the NFL, is like really the difference that sets apart like a Sunday night football from a Thursday night football from a Monday night football is some announcers. And you can have some good and bad announcers. And when you get the bad ones, you know it. And when you get the good ones, you know it, right? And so it's their competency. It's their kind of their preparedness. And then when things go wrong, their ability to kind of think on the fly, how much they know about the particular subject that they're talking about is ultra critical, honestly. And first, I think your competency from a GLTC especially standpoint, phenomenal. Just being able to call a race like that is difficult, right? Calling a race in general is difficult, but being able to do it with the cadence that you did it, how quickly you're able to speak to it. You know, obviously you clearly prepared because you knew the names of the drivers, you knew how well they had done previously, and having that background and being able to, you know, prepare yourself so that you could have a lot of that information at hand to make it interesting for the viewer who might not have ever seen this before is just so critical to the show. Like, I cannot overstress. We could have million-dollar live streams, but if the dude who is talking and giving you the information is an idiot and sounds dumb, it is a waste of freaking money.
Well, I hope I'm not an idiot or sound dumb, so that's great.
No. And that's what I'm saying. I think, I don't know if I want to say lucked into it, but.
They lucked into it. Let's fucking say it.
They lucked into it. I mean, yeah. Like, you had done some of this other stuff that you'd done before. And honestly, if you even look at, Lime Rock. Let's take Lime Rock. That was probably a big day for you, right?
Oh, totally.
And so you got to sit there and do a live stream with one of the most well-known, right, like announcers in motorsport ever. And like, that's the coolest shit ever.
Yeah, there's been some pinching of myself a little bit in the last couple of years, especially. There's been some big moments in my career that I feel like I almost want to say that I feel like I haven't really deserved, because I kind of fast tracked my way here. And like we said before, I didn't have any background in broadcasting, and there are kids that are going through, you know, broadcast school or, sure. or they're majoring in it, and they have not gotten the opportunity to do the stuff that I've gotten to do. Right. Purely by chance. And that sometimes feels unjust to me, but sure. I've gotten the chance to call races at the Nashville Street Course on television. I've gotten to go to the St. Petersburg Grand Prix last year. That's actually happening this weekend. I wasn't able to go this year, but you know, I've gotten to do some really cool things. Road America, calling with Greg Kramer on the PA. Greg,
yeah.
I mean, all that stuff is just incredible to me. And it's still... all this has happened in the last 5 years, which is crazy. I actually just hit 5 years on the creation of Sim TV about a week ago. So really the last 5 years, all that time has happened. So it still is pretty wild, but the thing that helps a lot in an announcing role is that you have someone next to you that can bounce off of you and yep. compliment you well, which has not always been the case, for me, meaning that I was the weak link in the conversation. I mentioned Nashville. I worked with Ryan Marine, who is incredibly talented and takes so many notes on everything. His notebook is about 150 pages thick on just one series. And I sat next to him for one weekend and was completely outclassed. And it was a wake-up call for sure.
I mean, being outclassed by somebody who's done it for so long and has a background, right?
Yeah.
And is comfortable in the position they're in. Like, that, I don't think is, like, that's not problematic. That's a great learning experience. Again, it's absolutely. Like you said,
totally
to sit next to some fantastic broadcasters. You got a fantastic experiences, and we talk about how people get to where they are, personally in our group a lot. And I think a lot of it is luck. A lot of it's just chance, but what people do with that opportunity and if they take it seriously is very important. And I think that you've taken it seriously. You want to be able to present, you know, seemingly from, you can tell me if I'm completely wrong, and if I'm wrong, you're great at tricking people, but you seem like you take it seriously and you're like, hey, this is my opportunity to do better. I'm going to learn more. I'm going to try to do more. I'm going to try to have better color commentary. I'm going to try to learn more about the sports. I'm going to try to, you get what I'm saying? Like
yeah.
you're putting your best foot forward to be able to make that happen. And that's important. You're not just sitting, you didn't just stumble into the room and then all of a sudden you're the dude. No, you've worked on it. You've tried to make it happen. Yes, there's other people who've tried to make it happen as well, but everyone's path is different. And I think it's important that you're trying. You're not just sitting on your laurels. You're trying to get better and better and better each time.
Maybe it just likes being humble, Mike. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, everyone likes being humble, but that's okay. I mean, you can talk about yourself. I mean, you work for it. That's okay.
I mean, for me, it was, I think you talk about being committed to it and really being dedicated. And I think for me, when I had never really heard of GridLife before the GridLife iRacers series that ended up bringing me out to Midwest in 2019. And when I showed up and I saw what GridLife was doing, as a motorsports fan, that was a significant moment for me because I'd only ever seen or really been exposed to professional motorsport. I'd never really seen amateur grassroots road racing or competition. And it was a wake up call that this exists and this is super cool. And the broadcast side of it, the fact that we are able to do that and bring that to the world is a really special thing. You can look back at history in the last 50, 60 years that these little pop-ups of series in Europe and in America that get all this broadcast attention. Maybe they're on TV for a couple of years and then they fizzle out and go away. And we always look back at the golden moments of Speed World Challenge in the 90s. And, those are special moments. And right now, I think with GLTC and Time Attack, we have a real opportunity to kind of take that golden age and stretch it out so that people in 50 years are looking back at it, not as history that it's gone and happened, but that it's still actively happening and that we have kind of kept a museum of time. So I'm hoping that it's a long lasting thing. But obviously, as you guys know, the broadcasts are really challenging for a lot of reasons at the budgets and the levels that we're trying to take it to. But it's so important. And that's why I'm so passionate about it, is because it's the purest form of racing that there is. And the drivers are not beholden to corporate, what companies want them to say. They're the people that are building cars in their garages. And this is what motorsport is to me, is the people that are passionate about it. So if I can't match that passion, then for me, it's not the right fit. But obviously, I've landed, I think, where I'm supposed to be.
You got Mike to not say anything. Holy shit.
No, that's, I like, impressive. It. I'm overwhelming for most people. That's okay. But I really like it. Like, it gives me goosebumps a little bit because that's the truth of it, right? We talk about this a lot as well, is that Time Attack, GLTC is the 60s and 70s, right? Is the Can-Am cars of the 60s and 70s. Is the fundamentally before it got too big, right? But is the 1950s and 60s SCCA, where Corvette would drop a car off to some dude who has the smallest shop on a corner, and then they'd race that car all over the country. And they would be, transporting the car, open trailers, all that stuff, just trying to make it happen. That's what this is. That's what GLTC is. It's just some people trying to have a really good time and compete at the highest level that they can without a bunch of other distractions. And I think that's really important. And the way that it's presented to people, I think that's perfect, right? That's kind of how I feel like it needs to be presented to people, because I think it, like you said, it's an opportunity. This is an opportunity for something that is special. That's something that is kind of pure, as much as that's kind of like a nasty word, but let's say it's pure.
Yeah, I get it.
And, it's an opportunity to really show that this kind of racing exists and that people can be involved in it. It's not out of reach. And I think that's right. Really hard for most people to understand, that it's not super far out of reach. There's tons of people who are going to go, yeah, I can't race GLTC. I'm never going to be good enough. That's not necessarily true. You have to put your best foot forward, and racing is never going to be cheap. I'm not saying that it's going to be cheap, but you can join as part of the pit crew. You can join as part of, like a helper or a secondary driver or whatever. But there are opportunities here to kind of be a part of what is like a racing series that has tons of passion in it, comparative to a lot of, unfortunately, series that are gentleman drivers or beholden to corporate interests or all these other things. And God knows everybody loves corporate interests whenever they're racing. That's exactly what we want to hear about, that Huggies really wants you to buy their diapers today. Like, yeah, I couldn't have done it without Huggies. And it's like, yeah, good. The sponsors are very important. I get it. But it shouldn't be the main feature. Right. That's just where I'm at.
And I've seen both sides of the world, and I still see both sides of the world because, I work at SRO and GT World Challenge, which is literally the definition of gentleman driver racing.
Right. Yep.
And you know what? There's a place for it, and it's great in its own right, but it's not the thing that gets me that excited. It's because, look, these cars, they always talk about, these are GT cars that are based on their road going versions. And that's cool. But a Mercedes AMG is a $200,000 car. And as a normal human being, I will never get, well, maybe working in this line of work, who knows, but I'll never get a chance to own one or drive one of those things. But here at Grid Life, you go in and what are we racing? We're racing Civics and Miatas and BRZs and
right.
a minivan and a truck. And I mean, these are all the cars that I can have.
Right.
And that's something that's really exciting because I think it used to be that you could see racing series racing cars like that. And it's becoming less and less and less. We're seeing classes kind of reduced down. You know, you've seen the GT ladder especially has really been reduced globally to just GT3. And GTE is going to go away as well. So that's going to go to GT3 eventually. So you've whittled down all these different kinds of GT cars into just one category.
Yeah.
And at Grid Life, in our Wheel to Wheel, yes, we only have one category, but the diversity in that one category spans more than any class in the world.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. I'm with you on all that. I think that's part of what makes it special and interesting is that you can't see that anywhere else. And a lot of GT racing, you see like you said, you see a lot of, let's say the GT3 cars, you see like Lamborghini dominate for a while. Then you see Mercedes dominate for a while. Then Porsche dominates for a while. And it's like, you're watching 1, 2, 3 finishes a lot. And that's that. And obviously the backing from, you know, their corporate overlords is huge, right? They're dumping a bunch of money into it. So it's required, right? You can't race at that level without a bunch of money.
Right.
And that's fine. It does make it somewhat interesting, but here, right? Like you said, some guy shows up with an S10 and tries to make it happen. It's a dream, right? I like this car. I'm going to try to make it happen. And there's still enough room in the rules to do well if you know what you're doing, if you can build something, you know, if you can build something with thought in it, you can still do well with most chassis.
Yeah, and I think that all this is not to say that you know, professional racing is inherently bad in any way. I think the existence of many kinds of racing is fantastic. And I'd actually say that I think we are on the verge of a golden age in motorsports, especially road racing globally, with WEC and IMSA kind of getting on the same page, at least with the new prototypes and that sort of thing. And that's great. But I think the ability for people to get interested in motorsport is probably the most crucial portion of it. Because if there aren't people that are interested in motorsports, then motorsports doesn't exist. It's built on people caring. I don't care if it's fans or I don't care if it's the gentleman drivers, but someone has to want to watch racing or want to be a part of it. And that just doesn't happen out of the blue. You need to kind of engage the community somehow. And it starts with your grassroots series. I think the oval side of the world has a very different approach to it. Mm-hmm. And I think they're pretty healthy and strong. But on the road racing side, it's important that we make this visible and accessible to people that want to be involved, especially as car culture in the next 20, 30, 40 years is going to go into a pretty extreme transformation, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I agree, like the Circle Track guys is a completely different feeder coming in. And you got those guys, right, racing every weekend down the street from their houses. Yep. And they've got feeders all the way up, right? You can drive an old Saturn or whatever in the Sunday prime race or whatever. And then you can go all the way up to a modified or a super modified, right? They've got all those happening at your local track and those can grow, you know, potentially can grow into something else and then roll into a NASCAR or NASCAR truck series or something like that. So they've got that kind of, it's not all televised. It's all right. It's not all the same until you get to the higher levels, but they have a really good feeding program that makes people interested because they go to their track on Saturday, Friday night, whatever, and then they're watching NASCAR otherwise. So it's all those people who care about the low level that then care about the high level.
Well, flip side too, right? I actually don't watch pro road racing because I find it boring and too long, but I really enjoy GOTC the most though. Just it can hold my attention span and I don't know, generally it's more exciting. It's probably Kyle's doing, but yeah, and it's more relatable to me, right?
It's all Kyle. You know? The racing's terrible, but Kyle's doing it.
You guys are making my ego explode tonight.
Oh, it's gonna be a good week for you. But yeah, like watching GC3 cars, it's one of those things. Like even looking on Racing Junk, like looking for a used one, like there's no way in hell I'm gonna buy a house worth of car, you know. So
yeah,
it's just something that's never obtainable for me, and then I don't even know the people.
Yeah, it feels good to be able to be a part of it. I think that's a big part of this for us at least.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that you kind of touched on was, you know, the local track thing and, you know, the ability for them, you know, for the oval racers to have exposure. And I think one of the key differences in bringing broadcast to road racing versus oval racing is an oval, you have your action contained right in front of you.
Right,
you can set up one camera and some Wi-Fi and you've got a live stream. And a lot of tracks do, you know, local live streams and, or, you know, Facebook streams. And there's a way for people to see that content. On the road racing side, you have a huge challenge because now you're with a budget of, you know, tiny budgets compared to the pros. You have a 4 mile racetrack and somehow you need to not miss anything. That's an incredibly challenging proposition. And I think that is a pretty big barrier to presenting road racing at the grassroots level.
Yeah. And I'm with you. It's like, yeah, how do we get that backstretch? How are we looking at that? Now you got to mix in camera angles. You need all these camera angles. You need to be able to talk to it. You specifically, the presenter has to be able to see that action to be able to say anything about it. Like, it's a whole new can of worms and it is hard. And it's like, it really does. I often feel like we pick the hardest thing to do with no budget, right? Yeah. Like the only thing that would be worse is if we were trying to shoot rockets in the space with the same budget.
Yes.
Because we're not doing that either, but
we're getting pretty close.
Yeah. It feels like it's something, you know what I mean though? That's what it kind of feels like. And that's what's funny about it is like, how can you make this all work? And reasonably, obviously, we're lucky to be here at this time because live streams even 10 years ago wouldn't be a thing. And now there's tons of live stream options, but they're still really hard to produce well, right? So,
yeah, I think it's interesting. If you look at different motorsport disciplines and you look at their ease of broadcasting, mm-hmm. I'm going to make a statement that I'm willing to bet that there's a massive correlation between the ease of broadcasting that motorsport and the popularity of that motorsport.
Sure.
Look at rally, for example. Incredible motorsport. Everybody loves rally.
Yeah.
Right. But only at the grassroots level, where can I watch grassroots rally? Because think of the challenges of streaming miles of roads in the forest. It's just not easy, right? So how as a fan, without going, can I get involved in it? And that's, you know, that's a challenging thing. So I think, you know, oval racing in the United States, NASCAR is the most popular motorsport to watch. F1's getting there, but NASCAR is still the most popular. And it's the easiest thing. They have everything contained and they can just, you know, as it started, it just required a couple cameras to capture. And now it's obviously, you know, multi-billion dollar industry. So it's changed. But again, I think the ease of broadcasting helps that a lot.
Yeah, I think that's a fair correlation. I think we can get some stats on that. I think that would hold true pretty hard there. The other thing we just talked about, honestly, and I think it was even last week, we talked about one of the big things that brought, obviously, F1 wasn't overly successful within the United States, but one of the things that improved its success substantially and improved its viewership substantially was Drive to Survive, and that being able to get some of that background, kind of humanize everybody involved with it. Obviously, these guys are spending hundreds of millions of dollars. It is just not a lifestyle most of us can understand, but that background of humanizing people and realizing, yeah, there's all this money floating around, but these dudes are just people.
They're just dudes
and they're trying to make it, you know, they just so happen to be the best drivers in the world most of the time, and they're just trying to make it happen.
But they're dudes with real emotions, and like you can see the anger, the sadness, the happiness. Like you can go through the whole,
I think that's important.
You can empathize with them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's a content driven sport, right? I mean, if you think about what motorsport is, it's a spectator experience. And the more ways that people can engage with the sport, the better off you are. And I think you're right. Drive to Survive did an amazing job at, I mean, for me, that was what got me into it. I had kind of passively followed it, but Drive to Survive got me reinterested in it. And so content's a huge piece of it. I think at GridLife, especially, I think it's one of the things that we're really strong at is the content side. When you compare to things like the SECA and NASA,
yep.
You know, they've got comparable entries and not to get into the whole thing between them, but I think content and the way it's presented and produced matters a lot to, I think, people's public perception of it.
Yeah,
I agree. And I like how you thought about your answer before you said it, because I was gonna say some wild shit. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, we just say wild shit. I mean, I'm always thinking about an answer, but inevitably my mouth says more than my head wanted to. So that's a personal problem.
I have the opposite problem. My mind's always ahead of my mouth. And so when things get really intense, I stumble because my brain working too fast, my mouth not able to keep up with it. It happens.
Oh, so that's good. My brain works really fast, but my mouth is really, really fast. It's freaking weird. Anyway, the other thing that I wanted to kind of switching gears just a slight bit, is I'm curious, is obviously you're doing presenting for racing and everything. Do you have your own car that you like to drive? Do you, have you done performance driving, that kind of thing?
A little bit. I've kind of, for me, it was, I was never really, I never really had the opportunity when I was younger to get into driving before my involvement with Grid Life. So I didn't have a car in high school or college. Right as I was getting out, I got a Toyota Corolla, you know, toaster.
Fantastic car. Perfect car.
And it's great. I still have it. It's a great car. But when I got hired at Grid Life and I started realizing I had opportunity to get on the racetrack, I got a Scion FRS, which is, as a high schooler, when that thing came out, you know how people put like the picture of the Diablo on the wall when they, you know, in the 80s? That was the, for whatever reason, that was the one that I wanted. I wanted it in hot lava. And I, you know what? I was driving my boss crazy about talking about this thing. He's just, go buy one. Like, you work, you have a job now. Just go get one. So I went and got one because they're not that expensive as far as cars go.
It is so, not a Diablo or a Countach.
Not a Diablo.
Yeah.
And so I got that. And within a couple months, I had it on track at Blackhawk Farms in Gingerman. And I really enjoy driving that car on track. It's a fantastic chassis, as everyone knows. Not super intimidating from a power perspective, obviously. The challenge for me was that it has a payment on it. And I didn't want to crash it, and I didn't want to blow it up. So that car has been retired from track duty. But I do have a 2012 Fiesta hatch that is going to get and see a little bit of track time this year in Sunday Cup, hopefully. So hopefully some more. But I've only been on track maybe a dozen times or so.
Yeah, I mean, that's good, though.
You've been involved with Grid Life. That means you have to have a cool car the first time out at all times.
So, yeah. It's a requirement, right? It sucks.
It's a lot of pressure, but sorry. Got to enforce the rules.
We're just gonna edit it and make up a car for you that's cooler than that.
Yeah.
We're not gonna let
it's got an LS7 FRS fucking slam.
Yeah.
So you know Cosmo or whatever the fancy Mazda is that. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
780 to the wheels. Crazy.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. We're going the obscure car route there even. So that's good. No, that's cool though. I mean, so you weren't really into the performance side of things until Grid Life then. So it didn't really pique your interest or anything. You didn't have an avenue in.
I think it was more that I didn't have an avenue in or didn't know where I could do it.
Sure. That's intimidating.
Yeah.
We talk about that all the time too.
Right. I mean, I grew up in upstate New York, right? Rochester, New York is not exactly known for being a racing town, right? So
sure.
There wasn't a lot of kids that were interested in cars in my high school. And it just wasn't something that I mean, there's, now that I know that there's, you know, the Finger Lakes region SCCA, there's, you know, there's stuff you can do. I just didn't know that existed and didn't, you know, at the time I didn't have a route and didn't have a car. So that's a whole other thing. But there's ways to get around that. But, for me, it was the having the exposure at Grid Life and having free track time, which also really helped.
Wow.
That allowed me.
He said it out loud. It's okay.
Flex.
Well, I mean, it's you don't really get to take advantage of it a lot. Especially when you're
working
on the broadcast, so it's a thing. But I hope to get on track some more. That's the goal, right? You want to take advantage of stuff you can take advantage of.
Yeah. Of course. So, always take advantage of those opportunities. I always tell people to, if there's a door in front of you, an opportunity in front of you, walk through that door. If the other side of that door looks like shit, you can always walk back.
And to be fair, I've been given some opportunities that, again, we talk about deserving things. You know, I'd never been on track before in my life, and Ben Horisco from Ultima Raceworks offered me his little Spec Miata, the one that has run in GLTC before. Yep. He offered that to me at Road America in 2020 to run in HPD.
That's a big undertaking right there.
It was a big undertaking, and I almost convinced myself not to do it because I was afraid of that, never having been on track before.
Everything about that, be afraid of that, yeah.
And so, you know, I said, you know, let's try this. So I did the beginner program at Road America. And with his Miata, and it was very scary. I had never even driven stick on a racetrack before. I'd never done a heel-toe downshift before. So I rolled out on the racetrack, you know, kind of stumbling through the gears. And my only experience heel-toe downshifting was from the muscle memory I had learned in iRacing and learning how to do that properly. I went down into turn five on the warm-up lap and gave it a shot. And it went into gear, and it actually sounded sick, and it was super, super cool. And of course, it was messy after that. It was a first-time wonder, but I had a great time. It was raining that weekend, so I got the experience of locking up a tire and all that. So that was a crash course, real quick. And then I famously, I'm not sure if anyone remembers this, but I famously took that car out again at Midwest. That was a September showing or October that year. And I spun that 85 horsepower Miata out, leaving pit lane.
Sick. So, we've all been there. It's fine.
What year was that? 19? Or 20?
That was 20. It was there in front of the fans. That there wasn't a whole lot there because it was COVID. But I remember when I spun, it was on the exit road, right when you make that left when you pass through.
Yeah,
the gate.
Everybody else spins. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, when it's wet there, it's kind of a weird thing. I've seen a lot of people spin there. So
yeah, I mean, this is a car that dynoed at 85 horsepower.
It doesn't matter.
It dynoed at 850. That's what you got to tell people. Add a zero.
Yeah. I was in first gear. I was on tires that were old, and I looped it. And as I was doing it, I remembered from the sim, again, not a lot of track experience. When you spin 2 feet in, got the clutch in, didn't kill it. But I remember looking at all the people on the berm. And
staring right back at you. They had really big eyes at that point, right?
Yeah. And I rolled back in, and Ryan Christoph gave me my silly goose patch. So
there you go. You needed it. And so, like, I mean, that comes back to the things we can learn from sim racing, which is, again, pretty important, right? You've never had an experience in on track in real life, but you kind of knew what to do, at least a little bit, right? To handle it and move on, right?
Yeah.
So that's cool.
The biggest thing for me was I had driven hundreds of laps at Road America in the sim, which is a laser scanned version of it. So, you know, one of the things they were going over in the beginner class is make sure that you're looking ahead, looking at the corner stations. And for me, when I got out of the racetrack, it felt really natural. Not necessarily cool. The driving piece was
terrifying,
you know, was terrifying, but my environment was extremely familiar. I knew where every corner station was. I knew where to put the car on the racetrack. I knew where my braking points were within a margin. Again, this is a car I'd never driven before, but I felt really comfortable. And I think the sim didn't teach me how to drive the car, but it certainly got me up to pace a lot quicker than if I had not had
that otherwise. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's part of it. And, the biggest thing is that there's just more things happening. There's more feedback around you. And then obviously the fear of anything actually happening, that stress, but otherwise, perfect time for sims to kind of like get you up to speed and let you do things quicker than you would have been able to otherwise. Like, this is a very new thing. This is only a last, 10, 15 year thing.
Yeah. And I always tell people, because I've seen a lot of drivers that have real world experience try a sim for the first time, and they always go, oh, this is nothing like real life. And I will say the opposite.
Dan says that.
But here's the thing. It's different if you come from the sim to the real world versus the real world to the sim, because in the sim, you are missing the seat of the pants feel. When you get in a real car, you have an added sensation that you didn't have before. So you're only helping yourself. When you're going from a real car back to the sim,
you are
removing a sensory input that you relied on. You're not able to use the auditory and visual signals the same way, and it feels harder. And so that's the thing I always say is you have to really relearn how to do everything when you're going backwards. But from the sim to real world, I think is a much easier jump. You're not be winning GLTC races right off the bat. You almost might. DJ Alessandrini did that. No wheel-to-wheel experience and immediately jumped in and finished fifth or something. But it's easier to go that way than it is the other way.
It's terrifying. For me, like when I got on a sim the first time, I was far more afraid, even though it was virtual, to crash, and I am, and like in real life, you can kind of feel it getting sideways, and like visually on a sim, it's kind of what you have to go by, and by the steering wheel. But like, you don't have that seat moving type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And the audio too. That's a big thing. Yeah. Is the tire noise will tell you a ton in sim racing. So I always tell people new to sims to like crank up the tire sounds, because that is going to be your new analog for your seat of the pants feel.
See, I'm a railroader. I can't hear. So.
Yeah, I honestly like with the sims and everything like that, I'm good at imagining what this would have felt like in a car. So I didn't obviously start with sims, like good sims, right? Mm-hmm. Gran Turismo doesn't count from Gran Turismo 2 doesn't count.
You just pissed off a bunch of people again.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, day that ends in Y. But from going from real driving to the sim driving, I actually liked it a lot for learning the tracks and everything like that, because my mind almost added the butt feel. I don't know how to explain it, but if like I'm like, oh, I'm stepping out a little bit there and I've got a tire locked up, I like my brain goes, correlates it and then does it. Like it's like fake.
Yeah.
It's like my mind is making it up because I know what it is feeling like. I know what it should feel like. The visual inputs say that this is happening. And then my mind goes, Yep, you're sliding slightly. Yep. You know what I mean? Like the attitude of the car is all kind of like baked into where I'm at in my head. It's just very weird for me, but I kind of like that, honestly.
Yeah, so. I mean, the visuals, I think, are, for take everything else away. The best thing that you can do, even if you don't want to drive in a sim, is get a sim and go do a virtual track walk before you go to the track. Because
that's a good idea.
It's laser scans, right? They're identical.
Yeah. Especially iRacing. Anything iRacing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but that's kind of the standard now. iRacing, Assetto Corsa, even Forza has laser scan tracks now.
That's true, yeah.
So there is honestly value to be gained from just doing a lap around any of those sims and just, okay, there's a brake marker here. There's a tree here. You know, the track gets darker in this area, so I know that's where people are braking. Like all these things, you can use directly one-to-one, and the feel won't translate, but the visuals 100% do. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that you can get out of using sims.
There you go. Top tips.
Top tips. I'm not that fast. I'm like DJ Alessandrini, you guys know him. He will kick my butt any day in the sim, but I think the other thing that I've found it useful for is learning how to broadcast and stream and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that was also a one-to-one. I mean, broadcasting an esports race is no different than doing a real-world race.
Really? I think it would be more hostile. You get more direct one-to-one commentary from the esports stuff because you can actually see it, you know, whereas a broadcast is kind of a different.
I think the one thing when you're producing, which is I usually am producing and announcing at the same time, I'm selecting camera angles and things in esports land. The one thing that I found tricky was in iRacing, I can look at any camera angle at any time and click on any driver and see them. But I've also done the other thing where I was just announcing and I'm given the feed, and it's the same way it is in real life where you're looking at a feed and that's all you get. And we can go back and look at replays, but in the moment, you're given a feed of broadcasts and overlays and you have to announce it the same way. And so when I came to GLTC, I felt right at home, right out of the gate. You know, learning the drivers was one thing, but in terms of talking about the cars on track and what was happening, it was the exact same, and it felt really, really familiar to me.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's amazing to think what sim racing has done for a lot of things in the real world, if you will, just by being able to practice that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise.
Yeah, 100%.
A quick question before we get out of here. I was wondering, because we were talking about, I said Time Attack was boring to watch. You said you're changing that this year. Of course, we went over some rules about that. So
I did listen to that podcast, by the way.
Oh, so you guys hear when we talk shit. That's what you guys want to listen to.
Yeah, well, I came because I heard that you guys were talking about it. So I had to come see what the reaction was to it.
And it was great because you guys had the same idea that I had. So it's cool. But
yeah,
can you tell us more? Tell us what we don't know about that. Tell us more. More so,
What's the feedback on our? What's the feedback on what we think is going to happen versus what's actually happening?
I thought your feedback was very fair. I remember. I thought because for me, I'm terrified of this season. I am absolutely mortified because this, full disclosure, most of this rule set in terms of the on track and how it's going to operate was kind of I wrote it down in Google Docs and sent it to Adam, and he said, okay, let's do it. So if it sucks, I'm going to feel really personally responsible for it. So that's the first thing.
We know who to blame.
Yeah. I mean, it's a whole thing, but what I think a lot of people don't know is that this was supposed to happen last season. We had talked about it in the off season of 21-22, and we just never really formulated a plan for it. So we kind of just ran through the season, and at the end we had the same conclusion, which was, you know, this is functionally and operationally fine and no one's complaining about the format. But the way that we're producing it is not doing it justice for the people that are competing and the people that are watching. So, one day, I think it was a Thursday in the office, I just opened up a Google Doc and just started typing out the way that I thought, would make it more exciting. And that was, let's put something on the line. Let's have a little bit of a weekend progression so that we can at least guarantee ourselves when we know the competition is going to be happening. Because the biggest problem with it prior, at least in my perspective, and I'm sure others might differ, was that Ferris Kartoumi could run a fast lap on Friday morning and then nothing else happens for the rest of the weekend.
Agreed.
And so when you tune in, you might catch a fast lap or you might not. So the goal was to create a format in which people could tune in and cheer on their friends, their family, their favorite driver all weekend leading up to a competition, and then know that they can tune in at 2 o'clock on Saturday or 4 o'clock, whatever it's going to be, and know that a winner will be decided now. And it's definitely is going to change how you approach the weekend, and it's going to change how people drive a little bit. But I think in the end, I think the drivers are going to have more fun because they're going to feel a little bit more pressure And I don't know that people in this sport are looking for an easy go at it. I think they're looking for that real sense of competition. I think this is going to give them that. I also think the way the format's going to work, we're going to have a lot more single class on track moments. So Club TR, for example, will almost always have its own run group in qualifying. So you're going to be on track directly with the people that you're competing against instead of being split up all the time, which I think is going to make on track interactions better for everybody, because they're all in the same community. It's not going to be like an unlimited car that's off pace is going to get in the way of a Club TR car. So that will be eliminated. And then my final point before we get into more discussion about it is the shootout. Again, each driver will get 2 flying laps. We're going to stagger them a little bit, but everyone's going to grid up like it's a big GLTC race, slowest to fastest, and whoever comes out on top wins for each class. I think that's going to be so fun to watch. I think people will be standing trackside cheering people on. I think spectators at the track, spectators on the live stream, and I think the drivers are all going to like this better. If they don't, I'm not going to be offended about it. We're going to change it back.
Send them to us. No, don't change it back. Fuck them. I think it's fantastic.
But yeah, I mean, it might not be, right? We have to go into that knowing that there might need to be changes for sure.
Yeah. Like I said before, from a history standpoint, this has been done pretty similarly. Maybe not the amalgamation of all of the ideas all in one spot, but there's been bits and pieces of it around the Time Attack world, as a basic history lesson. That's kind of what we went through when we talked about it. And also, I said it in the other podcast, we're all going to complain, so fuck us. Yeah. Who cares what we want?
Exactly.
There is a component to that, actually.
Time Attackers are going to bitch about anything and everything. That's just what we do. We made a whole podcast about it.
Yeah, exactly. You got to be honest with who you are, and I have no problem being honest with who we are.
Yeah. The biggest thing that people were concerned about, and rightfully so, is this going to reduce my track time? Because these people are spending lots of money to go out and get time on track. And there's 2 components to that argument. And one for me is...
I didn't ask that question at all.
There's some of me that goes, it's Time Attack, 1 lap matters. So
that's what I say.
You know, all the rest of them, screw them, right? The other component of me says, okay, these are customers. They need to get an experience. And we made sure with the scheduling, the way that the festival tour is going to work, track time will remain consistent. You could run less, but at the end of the day, you only need to run 2 laps. You need to run 1 lap in 1 of the 3 qualifyings and 1 lap in the shootout. That's all you need.
I'm not paying for track time. That would be HPDE.
Right. Well, so that's the other side of that argument, right?
I'm paying for competition.
Yeah. Also, if you can point to me to the Time Attack car that made every session last year, I'll give that person $500.
Right. And that's, again, why didn't we have progression like a F1, like elimination? Well, because I think it's fair in an amateur series to give people a mulligan, right? All they need to do is show up for 1 of those 3 qualifiers.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
You know what I mean? Like, let's not make it too hard. We're not trying to make it, you know, a gotcha. We're just trying to make it exciting.
Yeah.
And one of the pieces of the broadcast, we're investing lots of money into making the broadcast show all of the times from the entire weekend in the ticker at once. So you'll see it change only if you improve. So that way you'll have a much better understanding of where everyone is. And we're going to be able to sort it by class now. So we can look at just Street GT or just Street Mod and see that throughout the weekend be consistent.
Yeah. We talked about that, and that's awesome.
Now, you don't have to tell me numbers, but how much of a cost increase is that, I guess, I suppose?
Yeah, I've always wondered the software side. Like who...
Yeah, oh boy.
Who puts together the overlays?
So the overlays are designed by me, and Chris gives those approval. The actual production of them and the functionality is built by Specialty Field Productions, which is the same team that is actually the one producing the broadcast. There's a guy over there named Eric Boyer who has his own company called, I think, Mad City GG, who's an esports guy.
I've heard of them.
You've heard of them. And so he's the one that's really working on the functionality and the programming behind the scenes. And last year was a 5-figure investment into redoing how we ingested timing. So previously, up until 2021, the timing software would just spit out what was happening and it would show up on the screen.
Right, show up on the screen. I remember.
Yep. And so now we are able to basically take that information, organize it, change what is displayed. We can save entire data runs of a race and play it back later so we can test new features. Now we're going to have the ability to filter by class. So all that stuff each year is about a high four to five figure investment to get that functional.
Pretty substantial amount.
A fraction of what it costs for the season to actually do the broadcast. Yeah. But
I've seen those bills before. They are Yeah. They are not cheap.
Yeah. The changes, I mean, I think the changes last year were really visual. From 2021 to 2022, there was a really big step up, and I think you'll see the same this year.
Yeah, I think that's, like I said, that's the hard part here in terms of that's why we wanted to get you on, because I think from a broadcasting standpoint and from a live stream standpoint, that, like you said, the group, the organization, the sport, the whatever that broadcasts better generally has a larger following, right? That's how you grow.
Yep.
And obviously, if you're able to grow, then you guys, specifically GridLife, as a generality, is able to sell more and to grow more internally, right? And to make more money, which I hope you guys make tons of money.
Well, so there's a pivotal point in here in the next 2 or 3 years where this has got to start turning a return on it, or else it's going to be a problem.
I talked to Chris about it as well. You know, more power to you guys. I'm always impressed. Like I said, I'm always impressed. I'm always fighting for you guys. Obviously, I'm not independently wealthy. If I was, I'd give you some money, but you guys are doing an awesome job with what's available to you, with a budget that's super tight, just trying to make it happen, you know, on passion. And it's super cool. And I can't say enough about that, you know, from that standpoint. And I think, like I said, trying to improve the live stream is probably the money best well spent in the whole scheme of things. Because, like you said, that's super important. And from a time attack perspective, especially, you know, and I would completely understand if you're like, that's not a show that we're trying to really, you know, monetize or bring more people in, because it might not be. GLTC has grown so much. It's got a lot of viewership there. It's maybe easier to consume originally. Unfortunately, Time Attack is kind of annoying. It's kind of difficult to get right.
We're fixing that. This Time Attack reformat, while it was intended to be more exciting for spectators at the track, the goal was never to make GLTC super uber popular and have Time Attack look boring. So there is a concerted effort to make Time Attack awesome.
But I mean, it was pretty easy to do.
Literally, my only goal is here.
It's natural, though. I mean, I get it. Like, I've done this for.
Yeah, go ahead.
Anyway,
say how old you are.
Never mind.
Fucking old man.
And I've done this for a long time. And, you know, the people who do it with us have done it for a long time. And we know that in Time Attack is a difficult thing to present. We talk about it all too often. I'm sure the listeners are like, God damn it, stop it. But I think that's cool that you're putting the time and energy into it, because we have lots of ideas on how to improve it. We've even went as far, I think we talked about it last time, we talked about it before, but knowing the competitors, knowing like the engineering, knowing all that stuff, I think is kind of critical in my opinion. Of course, you shouldn't really take my opinion for what everybody wants to hear is what I want to hear, because I'm broken, which we talk about all the time as well. But we've talked about how that criticality in terms of the information that's provided, you talked about it at the beginning, you know, closer to the beginning, where you kind of like started to dig in and you've kind of felt like you didn't completely understand the racing side of it as much, but then obviously you grew, you started to understand it more. You started to, you know, the ins and outs of what people are talking about while the racing is important for that color commentary side. And I think that's going to be ultra important for Time Attack as well.
You know, the biggest thing, and this is going to sound kind of counterintuitive, but the biggest thing that stands in the way of producing Time Attack to a similar effectiveness as we do with GLTC is the fact that it's easier to get into. Mm-hmm. And I'll explain myself here, because in GLTC last year, we had 124 unique drivers. So in Time Attack, we had, I think, 700. Holy across
shit.
The board.
Holy shit. So
when you look at trying to, and you talk about, you know, knowing the drivers and knowing the data and knowing the cars, it gets really hard, because the field consistency from event to event is crazy, right? It's all over the place. So when we go to Carolina Motorsports Park this year, we're going to have a field of GLTC cars. We go to Watkins Glen, we're going to have a field of probably 80% of the same people. But in Time Attack, when we go from CMP all to Watkins people, Glen, it's going to be a whole different group of people.
Right.
And it's because it's a little bit more accessible. So you tend to have a lot more local influence when you go to different tracks. Whereas GLTC, you're going to have people traveling a lot more to kind of stay with that consistent field. So that's the biggest challenge for me is, you know, the GLTC guys, they're my buddies. And there's a lot more of my Time Attack buddies now than I had previously. But it is a lot of people to keep track of. Formula One's got 20 guys, right? And so it's a lot easier to know about 20 guys. And I don't take notes. We go back to Ryan Marine's notebook. He's got a 150-page notebook on one series. I don't take notes. It's not how I work. I have to have a face-to-face conversation with you. Once I do that, I'm locked in. I follow you on Instagram, and I know everything. I'm really good at stalking
memory?
You.
Memory? Get the fuck out of here,
that's,
buddy.
That's how I mean, that's how I do it. You're like right. This.
Okay, hold on.
I'm liking Kyle more every day. Mike, you're, every 5 seconds, okay. He says something great.
See, that's see how loud you're getting? You're a psychopath. This is a me and Kyle conversation. Oh, sorry. That's impressive. All right. Sorry.
It's your friends, right? Like, do you have a notebook on your friend's birthday? I mean, maybe you
know. I don't know one. Any of my friends' birthdays. One. Crazy.
Okay, I don't either.
Facebook tells me that.
But you know a lot about your friends, right? And that's something that, like, no one keeps a notebook on their buddies.
Never let Devin know anything about me.
And it's easier that way for me, okay. Right? Because I'm not worried about what information I should be saving. If it's stats, a computer can do that for you, right? But if you're about knowing the person, knowing their car, understanding them, that's something that you get from walking around the paddock and interacting with them. And that's just fundamentally harder to do with a larger group of people.
Yeah, no, I think that's all very good, you know, very apt points. And it is difficult. And we've talked about it before that I've always wanted to be a little bit of a part of the announcing and the presentation a little bit from at least the high-end Time Attack side, because shit, I know everyone's build inside and out, right? And that's, like you said, just because... I mean, people ask us questions. I'm friends with everybody. And then I remember everything, right? I remember all the times they ran. I remember how they built their car, all that stuff. And that's just from, you know, just caring, right? I don't know how else to say it, but just being a part of the sport.
That's a polite way to say it. You're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I tried to be polite. But but that's what, like, in terms of what I would think would be interesting is some of that information that you know, I have stored and such. And I think I talk all right occasionally, not as well as you.
So you're submitting for the job to be next to Kyle.
Yeah,
for
I'm going to submit. I'm
gonna I need a guy. So
yeah. I mean, I've already told Mike you should do it too. So I.
Yeah, call me. Like I think from that perspective, I do think, you know, you might have, you know, you'll. I think I would speak for probably too much engineering, and then you could humanize me a little bit. I think that'd be a good team.
Yeah, and there's storytelling involved too, right? I mean, I don't take notes like I mentioned, and one of the things that I think I'm able to do is I can think back to a race from 2 years ago and recall something that happened and tell that story. And that's not necessarily something that would be easy to pull out of a notebook or flip to a page and read something, right?
Yep.
It's something that you just remember. And over time, those stories will kind of ebb and flow. You'll add more to them. You'll forget some. But I think that creates a more dynamic experience for the viewer and listener, because they're not hearing the same things said over and over and over again. They change as your experience changes.
Yeah. And I think that's all. I mean, that's the humanization, the personalization of everything is ultra important to getting people to kind of attach themselves to either drivers or the series.
Drivers aren't a stat. They're not a name in a notebook for me, right? They're people, they're real living, breathing people. And they're
crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy. Wait until you have to, announce for the autonomous driving series.
Brian Marine does that. That's what Brian Marine does that on the side. And
but then you got to know all the stats, right?
He does. And he's a stats guy. And he is really good at being the stats guy. And that's just how his brain works. Yeah. And I'm jealous of it at times, but he is a hard act to follow. Like I mentioned.
I mean,
it's just I can't say anything that guy doesn't already know. Right.
Right. It's effort.
It's incredible.
It's effort. And that's cool. I mean, it's effort. It's good to follow somebody up like that. Understand what they do. See if it works for you. If it doesn't, that's fine. Right. You don't have to do what everyone else is doing. And like I said, I think you're doing a great job of making it interesting. And so that's really the key component here is what is interesting to the viewer. It's not about individuals. It's not about what individuals want. And, you know, internally it's what resonates with the audience.
Sure.
So I think you do a good job there. So,
well, thank you.
Well, Cal, yeah, seriously, we really do think you do a fantastic job. We are very, as you know, critical of most people here, but
hypercritical.
There it is. But yeah, seriously, we do think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
If our listeners would like to find out, you know, talk to you or where to find you or where would that be?
I think my Instagram's a good place to go. It's 15_KyleH is my Instagram. Basically, if I've got enough mutual friends with you, I'll friend you on Facebook.
But if you have enough,
that's not a bad place. I don't like Facebook, but it's where I have to be. So, you know, that's fine too. So
that works.
Or my YouTube channel. I do esports stuff. If anyone is interested, I work with Greg Creamer on a lot of SimTV stuff now. So, SimTV cool. Broadcasting on YouTube. That's where you can find all the esports stuff during the off season. So
very cool. Anything else you'd like to add? Because we're gonna roll it up here.
I think I got it all. I talk plenty, guys.
There you go. No, I mean, I think you gave a great, awesome background. Right? We got to hear for perspective from the inside. That's awesome. I really do appreciate it. Yeah.
Anytime.
Anyway, go check out GridLife's live stream if you haven't. Tell everybody. Tell us what you think. If you've got any ideas for Kyle or GridLife, feel free to comment, tell us what you think, and maybe we'll have another conversation.
Absolutely.
Let's say mid-year. Let's see how the time attack is working.
Let's go once per quarter. Sure. We can't overbear them.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Right. Yeah. We're not too much, but no, we really do appreciate it. It was awesome. Lots of really good insight, and it was as good as I thought it was going to be.
Psst. It's that time again, boys. I need those goddamn reviews. You can say that Devin is forcing you to do them, or you can leave some genuine feedback, and I'll be sure to read them and get them back to the boys. In the meantime, you can join our Facebook group, which is Professional Awesome Technical Forum. You can follow us on Instagram at Professional Awesome Racing, and we have a Facebook regular page with the same name. But until then, we'll talk to you later, and we really appreciate you listening.